Hello, everybody, and welcome to RVW Wealth Wisdom Podcast, where we share some practical tips and knowledge for investors. I'm Stefan So, and with me today is our senior team member, Jonathan Gerber. And welcome back, Daniel Prince, head of iShares Product Consulting for BlackRock.
Great to have you back, Daniel.
Jonathan and Stefan, thank you for having me back.
One of the things we encourage our investors to do for the fixed income component of their portfolio is to build five-year ladders. It's a classic, time-proven strategy to build a secure, stable basket within your portfolio. And that's something we commonly do. Historically, we'd been using individual bonds to help build laddered bond portfolios for clients. And when I talk about a five-year ladder, I mean buying bonds where 20% matures in each of the next 5 years. So for example, you'd buy a bond that matures in 2020, 2021, 2022, 2023, and 2024. And when the 2020 bond matures, you'd then tuck it in at the end and buy a 2025 bond. And so continually having a rolling ladder where if the client has a liquidity need, the bond that's maturing next would cover their needs. If they don't have a liquidity need in that year or equities were up, they would tuck that maturing bond into the end of the ladder. And historically, we had been using individual bonds to achieve that ladder. But iShares came along and developed this iBond concept. And Daniel, I want you to tell us a little bit about what is an iBond and how does it compare to buying an individual bond in each of the next 5 years to build that five-year ladder?
Yeah, absolutely. Would love to talk about that. And I think the last time I was on your show, we talked about how the innovation of the ETF structure has brought a strategy in a more efficient way. And we were talking about a quality ETF. And I really think about the iBond innovation in that same vein. How do you make what was, you know, used to be a strategy that was maybe a little bit less efficient by buying the underlying and trying to trade it yourself? How do you make it more efficient for investors today? And one of those that I'm extremely excited about is our iBond ETFs. So the way that iBonds work, and we launched them almost a decade ago, and it was really to solve a couple problems. There's, as you mentioned, Jonathan, the time-tested strategy of building a ladder, right? It basically insulates you from interest rate rises. If interest rates rise, it doesn't matter. You own the bond to maturity and you collect your yield. But the issue with mutual funds and ETFs that just own fixed income perpetually is that they're very susceptible to rate rises. The NAV can really move. You don't know exactly what you're going to yield. And the, you know, one of the challenges with individual bonds is how do you build enough liquidity and build enough bond positions to really diversify all that risk? So we launched iBonds to really tackle those two problems. We wanted to solve for how do you build diversification? So first off, each iBond will own hundreds of bonds. So you're buying an ETF that simply owns bonds that mature in that given year. So you get the diversification of a fund. But funds, while they're fully diversified, don't mature. And here, iBonds do mature. So you do know what your yield is in advance, like an individual bond. So like an individual bond, you get your yield. Like a fund, you get your diversification. And that additional benefit that neither share is that ETF, the exchange traded. The notion that iBonds trade on the exchange gives you deeper liquidity. So now you can do the laddering strategy. You can ladder out 5 years and do it in a fairly efficient manner.
So the way you would lose money investing in a bond is twofold. Number one, default. You've lent money to a company that isn't able to pay you back when it matures. And number two is you'd want to sell the bond because you had a liquidity need before it matured in a rising interest rate environment. And it sounds like the iBond actually solves both of those problems because you've got so many, you've got hundreds of bond issuances within that one position that the risk of default is diversified away almost entirely. I'll keep our regulators happy by saying largely diversified away. But when you're buying hundreds and hundreds of bonds, we can be quite confident that a single default isn't going to have material impact on your portfolio. And then the second thing that you get with an iBond, that you also get with an individual bond, but more efficiently with an iBond, is this maturity date. And as you said, Daniel, you referred to it as no maturity. We think of it as perpetual maturity. Perpetual maturity. If you have a bond fund, there is no date to which you can hold it and get all your money back. And if interest rates rise, as many predict they will, again, keeping our regulators happy, that bond fund, if it doesn't have a stated date of maturity, may drop in value, or mathematically will drop in value, and may never come back, because there's no date to which you can hold it where you can get your par value. But the I bond solves that. You've got a date, December 31st, 2020. If you hold that 2020 I bond until the end of the year, those bonds are all maturing and you'll get a dividend. What will you get?
Yeah, at the end, the funds mature and you receive your NAV back. But it's important to note, along the way, they deliver monthly coupons as well. So there is that income component. And maybe sort of, you know, touching on the spirit of how do we lower the potential risk, the default risk. You know, one thing to note is that the I bonds are all investment grade bonds. Okay, so you're starting off with a high quality portfolio of bonds as it is. And each month we rebalance. And so if any bond becomes downgraded to junk status, it would get removed. So there's another element to help protect from that potential default risk. So you build in the diversification. We monitor it on a monthly basis. We remove any bonds that are investment grade or non-investment grade or get dropped down to non-investment grade. And for me, you know, that's one of the beauties about ETFs, right? The rules-based transparency means you know what it does on the tin. And so from the client experience perspective, you can collect your yield. You know when you get your money back and you have that sort of additional liquidity and minimizing a lot of that default risk. It's part of the reason why we see the I-bond lineup really growing this year. We've brought in several billion of flows as we've seen interest rates rise. Five-year ladders are starting to look fairly attractive. Folks are also getting concerned with credit risk, so they're moving up in quality. So we've seen a lot of interest and have almost doubled the overall AUM inside the I-bond suite this year alone.
Speaking of quality, that's exactly what we discussed in the last podcast. Could you let us know how a quality company is determined and how those are selected to be part of hundreds of different companies in a particular bond fund?
Sure. So in this case, we're talking about quality as being a manifestation of credit rating. So the indexes that these I-bonds track will look at the broad universe of corporate bonds and will screen out anything that's non-investment grade. They'll screen out things like callable bonds, which could get called and you might not actually get what you thought your yield was back. So it looks to scrub the universe for a couple characteristics that creates this ability to know that you own high quality bonds. So again, as measured by credit ratings, and that those bonds won't necessarily be called, because with individual bonds and with funds that own these, there's also call risk. And that's eliminated again from the overall portfolio just to make sure you get the consistent yield experience.
It's interesting you mentioned the callable bonds, because a lot of times when we actually review, you know, clients' statements that may be at other companies, we see bonds that are obviously can be called and you get actually lower the value than what you see. So you might be purchasing at much greater amount and then maybe a few days later, it is possible you get much lower. Can you talk about how that works?
Sure. So, you know, part of what goes in, so when you buy a bond, an individual bond or an I-bond, now that we're talking about I-bonds, you're really like buying yield, right? They have a coupon, but a certain price, you're really looking at an effective yield. And that yield is predicated on the ability to reinvest with current rates, right? So there's kind of what we call the reinvestment risk, okay? So when you have a callable bond, you potentially introduce more reinvestment risk, because generally when bonds get called, that means that the company can go service the debt for a cheaper coupon. So generally bonds will get called in more of a low rate environment. So if a bond gets called, and let's just say you were collecting a healthy coupon, let's just hypothetically say 4%, and that new issuance comes out at 3%, well, you get all your money back and now you can't earn that additional rate and you have to reinvest that lower. So there's some potential risk with callable bonds with the reinvestment aspect.
So the way it's set up now, what you're saying is it's much safer way to invest in bonds because there are no callable bonds in this structure.
Yeah, it's more predictable is what I would characterize that as.
I think of callable bonds as being heads I win, tails you lose. And the issuer is really in a position to exploit whatever happens to their benefit. And if you can avoid callable bonds, which we really seek to do, you're going to have a more predictable, more certain outcome in the investment approach. And what I've seen is that callable bond or non-callable bonds tend to be more easily traded and retain their value, especially as we see changes in interest rates.
Yeah, it's really about a function of something you can't control, these things called interest rates, right? and really trying to insulate the activity of the Fed and the market and how we determine rates. When you go the sort of, you know, non-callable route, it helps, you know, create a more predictable yield experience. And that's the whole spirit of the iBond suite, is you know what you're buying it at. You know what your effective yield would be. You have diversified away a good portion of the risk, and you collect that yield until your final maturity.
I really thank the team at iShares and BlackRock for creating transparency, liquidity, and a greater level of integrity in the bond market. And where I'm going with this is bonds tend to be a place where the retail investor has historically really been in a position to have been taken advantage of. Because unlike stocks, where there's real-time pricing coming from dozens of sources, there are thousands and thousands of bond CUSIPs out there. Not, CUSIP is like a ticker, but for a bond. And there's no liquidity, there's no transparency for what pricing ought to be with a bond, the same way there is with a stock. Like, you know, GE's got one ticker, for example. But how many issuances of bonds do they have? They've got, I think it's thousands of bonds in issue right now. And to keep track of what each of those bonds should be trading for at any given time is just an impossibility. And there's no easy way to see that for a consumer. And the other problem is not only lack of transparency, but also when you, the typical retail investor buys a bond, they're buying it from an advisor or a brokerage house, which acts as a principal, where they could be selling the bond out of their own inventory to the buyer, and the buyer isn't really in a position to know what did it trade for earlier in the day, or what did it last trade for, or what should I be paying for that bond. And often when we look at portfolios of new clients coming over, we see bonds that have just been mispriced or underperforming or illiquid or callable. And really, the team at iShares and BlackRock with your iBonds has really created a whole level of integrity, transparency, and liquidity available to the retail investor. And we use it as well as institutional advisors. But it's really because it's so good and so efficient and so inexpensive to trade. But really, it's a great way to build a portfolio of fixed income. And we really want to thank you for introducing that to the marketplace, being the first to market with the idea of building these baskets of bonds that all mature in a given year to allow these ladders to be effectively built. So thank you, Daniel.
Oh, no, I appreciate that. And if you let me, I'd love to make a comment on that, because, and I'll bubble this up to just fixed income ETFs, iBonds included within that, but just broader. Bonds trade over the counter, right? There's a very asymmetric amount of information out there, which means if you're trying to access bonds, you can call a couple different broker dealers and you're probably going to get different prices. And the benefit, and I think one day there's going to be like a Harvard Business Review on this, but in 2002, we launched our first fixed income ETF, LQD, just celebrated its 15-year track record last year. And at that time, investors say, how are you going to put bonds on exchange? How is that going to work? How are you going to create liquidity for an asset class, which relatively is less liquid? And what investors didn't realize is once you put something on exchange and you give the whole world a two-sided market, not just what you can buy it for, but what you can sell it for, all of a sudden, every eyeball, whether you are buying bond mutual funds, whether you are buying individual bonds, can now see visible liquidity. And it took a while for the market to really understand the power of building a secondary market. Fast forward 15 years. And today, you can trade 1,000 high-yield bonds inside of our high-yield ETF for essentially one basis point of spread when the underlying bonds trade extremely wide. So one day the world will write about how ETFs, and especially fixed income ETFs, brought liquidity by just putting it on the exchange and allowing transparency to really let liquidity thrive for an asset class that really suffered from that.
Yeah, speaking of liquidity and trading, when we are trading, let's say, you know, several million dollars in a day for a particular iBond, let's say that matures in 2019, more often than not, what we do is we either work with you or someone at TD Ameritrade or Schwab to see what can we get in the marketplace. So we might see a particular price, but thankfully, more often than not, we're actually able to secure a better pricing. You know, since we were talking about trading and liquidity, can you talk a little bit more about that to see how we're able to secure better pricing for our clients?
Yeah, absolutely. And this goes back to, you know, there's really two levels of liquidity for an ETF. Okay. There's the underlying. If we need to, I think last time we talked about creations and redemptions, if we need to grow the portfolio, there's also a secondary market. And so when we talk to clients about liquidity, we love having the conversation. First of all, we want to make sure clients have a good experience. But the ability to reach out to broker dealers, the ability to see visible supply, you know, when you're dealing with more of a transparent on-screen market, there's a lot better information. And if I can just generalize liquidity versus information, the more transparent information, generally speaking, the greater liquidity. So the notion that I-bonds trade on the exchange, we see two-sided markets. We can also look at market makers that have inventory. All these things are sort of known through terminals, Bloomberg terminals, et cetera, means that it follows in the vein of more information, the better the experience. I go back to when I was a kid. There was, you know, after school shows, they always showed this like slogan, knowledge is power. Right? And I think about that with the liquidity of ETFs. The more knowledge you have about who's trading it, when, where are pockets of liquidity, the more transparent it is, the more empowered you are as a broker dealer to make tighter markets. So that's how I think about liquidity. It's brought just the information asymmetry down and has democratized visibility so that my mom and the largest institution can both trade bonds more efficiently today.
That's great. It's interesting because the transparency that you're referring to wasn't, in my view, wasn't added to a lot of the large cap equity ETFs. It's a new feature from the same vehicle that we gained by applying that same methodology and technology to fixed income. And it's really, in our view, it's revolutionized the way we can access fixed income for our clients in a way more efficient, way more transparent, just better way. Thank you very much, Daniel.
Oh, thank you for having me on the show again, guys.
Thank you.
This podcast is not intended to constitute investment, legal, or tax advice. The ideas and strategies expressed in this podcast are not necessarily those recommended or implemented by RVW Wealth. Please consult and rely exclusively on your professional advisors.